This is Listen Likely, the show that keeps you up to date on all things happening in and around the Lakeland area. Here's your chance to plan your family activities and learn more about what your city government and your neighbors are doing to make Lakeland a great place to live, work, and play.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us on the June 2018 edition of Listen Lakeland Radio Show, a show highlighting people, places, activities, and organizations that make our community an exceptional place to call home. I'm David Robinson with Lakeland Vision. Today's show will feature a profile on Lakeland's Dr. Randy Avent, the president of Florida Polytechnic. So, Randy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, David.
And I think you're off to the airport here just a little bit.
I am headed home to move my youngest kid out of college and into another house.
Awesome. So, Randy, you spent 23 years in the Boston area, and specifically at MIT's Lincoln Lab. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it was a great place. It was, my first real job out of college, and I convinced my wife to go up there for 2 years and 3 years at the very most, and ended up staying 23 or so. But it was a great place to cut your teeth as a new job. I certainly learned a lot there about how to attack problems, and it was a wonderful opportunity.
And is that where you got that Boston accent from?
South Boston.
That's where I thought. A little North Carolinian there,
yes,
to be.
Yeah.
So you were the chief scientist at the Defense Department.
I did. Last 2 years when I was at MIT, I did what was called an IPA, which is a mechanism where people from universities can work in government for up to 4 years. And so I had the opportunity to be the chief scientist of the Defense Department and focus on university basic research and kind of set a strategic plan about how the Defense Department should invest in university research. It was a lot of fun.
Any projects you can tell us about?
Well, we had a number of areas, but most of these were very basic research. So by definition, it's not classified research. But we did a lot of work around autonomy, around things like quantum, and all kinds of different areas, neuro. I mean, they were fairly broad areas.
Awesome. And what administration was that?
That was the beginning of the Obama administration.
Okay.
And tail end of the Bush administration, beginning of the Obama administration.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I understand you did some island hopping for a while, too.
We had an opportunity to go live in the Marshall Islands for 6 years. And MIT runs a test site out there that does a lot of work on reentry physics. And and I went out there and ran a few radars and did research in super resolution and automatic target discrimination. So
some of that stuff probably Elon Musk is using now, since the government paid for all that work back then, right?
Yeah.
And what did you
and
think?
And he has tested out there.
He has,
He
really?
Has tested out there. Yep, that's where he went to actually test some of his early SpaceX stuff.
Yeah. So we need to get him on the program. I think he'd be a lot of fun to have on the program.
I'm sure he'd be better than me.
No, not at all. So did you had to watch those simultaneous landings, a month and a half ago. Was that just an amazing day for
He's really a remarkable person. I mean, it's difficult enough for most people just to start one company, and he has, two or three or something
exactly.
like that? And all of them really are changing the nature of the industries that they're in. So,
well, there's been a lot going on at Polytechnic, mm-hmm. Especially the last year, and a lot of milestones. You've been here now 4 years?
4 years, yep.
Yeah, and so congratulations on your anniversary coming up. I remember very fondly the final two candidates coming and meeting with different people from the city, and really enjoyed listening to your presentation. And obviously, we've known each other since then, so enjoyed the work you've done. So tell us a little bit about some of the achievements you've accomplished here in these four short or very long years, however you
four short years. Yeah, you know, the it's important not to lose sight of the fact that this was a startup university. And as I tell people at the university all the time, is there is no starting a new universities for dummies book. You know, this is something that not many people have done, and that was what was so interesting about the opportunity. We had some fairly heavy legislative mandates that were very difficult to achieve, and we've really been through all the phases of a startup business, and we talk about that fairly often. You know, there was a seed phase to start the university where we weren't really sure exactly what it was going to be, and there was a lot of debate about what it was going to be and who was going to own it. Went into a startup phase, which was getting it up and going and trying to create it and get it going so that we could open it up for students, which we did in 2014. And then we've been in a growth phase since that point. You know, two big milestones this year are accreditation, and you know, that's one that we talk a lot about because it was just so remarkable how everyone came together and got that done.
I heard that you guys set a record on accreditation for an American university or college.
Well, we, you know, during the run-up, when there was discussions about separating out from the university, and there was a discussion with Sachs, they did tell us that there was been one institution that has done it 2.5 years. What they neglected to tell us at that time was that institution had been around for 10, 15 years before it actually put the application in. So I think we're the only institution that we know of that has done it this quickly and really from scratch from the very beginning. The other big legislative mandate that we had, which was in law, was that we had to get to 1,300 students in 2.5 years. And that was just a tremendous lift and a tremendous task that really required us to grow the program and grow the university very, very quickly. And so, you know, we finished those first 3 years hitting those milestones, and then now we're beginning to turn our attention towards what we're calling Poly 2.0, which is how do we mature the organization? Part of the accreditation process is once you put your application in, you can't change anything, and so you're stuck. And so basically, you start a new university up. You say, this is the way it's going to be. But you figure out pretty soon that, well, I didn't get some things right. I got some things right, but you can't change them because they don't want to accredit a moving target.
Technology is changing so fast, and when you think about the jobs that are required in today's workforce, the job that is needed today didn't exist maybe four years ago.
That's right.
So it's constant change.
And so now we're getting into a nice part of, and I call it Poly 2.0, where we're beginning to go back and relook at the curriculum. We're looking at the administration. We're looking at everything. Reevaluate, and did we get it right? And a lot of places we did get right, but a lot of places that, you know, it needs improvement, and we're fixing those things.
So with a university growing as fast as it has, Randy, you know, what about the quality of students that are going there? I mean, how is that compared to the other 11 institutions throughout the state, state institutions?
The first 3 years, the focus was on getting to 1,300 students, and we've always had a really good quality student, application student. In those, we were a little bit more generous about what we accepted in, but still, you know, very good. Now that we're past that 1,300, our focus really is on shaping the class and building the type of institution that we want to build. I'll tell you that, you know, when I came to Florida, no one ever came to me and said, could you come build a mediocre university? you know, what everyone said is we want to build an institution that's a lot like an MIT. And the institution's always going to be small. We just don't have the facilities and the infrastructure that, you know, a lot of the large universities. The other thing is we got a large university on the left and on the right, and they're great universities. And so we don't need to go off and duplicate what they're already doing. So we're going to have a very different niche than a USF or a UCF. And so the only way that we're going to have a big impact as a small institution is to have tremendous quality. And so we've been marching up the student quality. And we are right now, I think, around an average 1,300 SAT, which is higher than NC State, higher than Ohio State, higher than Penn State, higher than Michigan State, higher than Virginia Tech, higher than Clemson. So, you know, it's a very high-quality institution, very, very good level of students.
Just don't tell Piyush Patel it's higher than Michigan, okay?
It's not yet higher than Michigan, but we have them in our sights.
Okay, good, good, good. Piyush will be happy to hear that, I'm sure.
Yes.
So the Tampa Bay Business Journal recently published a story that the research park next to Florida Poly, tell us a little bit about your vision for that and the impact that would have on our economy here in Central Florida.
And that's part of this Poly version 2.0, which is that now that we've hit all of the legislative milestones, it's time for us to really go back and build the type of institution that we think that we want to build. And there's a lot of pieces of that. Some of it is around organizational structure. We've been doing a lot around organizational structure. We put in place a very flat organizational structure. We pick department heads, and we're trying to help them with leadership. We've been very purposeful about what type of culture we want to build at the university. We have lots of discussions about that. We put in a performance management system to try and help us grow people within the university and offer professional development.
That's not something I can use on my car?
That's not something you can use on your car, no, unfortunately. The other thing is on the faculty side is faculty operate in the United States under what's called the tripartite mission, which is education, research, and service. And as a new institution, our faculty really been focused on the education and the service piece, and they've done a wonderful job getting us all up to speed. But now we're beginning to push a little bit more on the research side as well. So we're doing a lot of new things to the curriculum, and we're adding new programs to it. But one of the big things that we're looking at is that today's problems tend to be much more complex than what they did in the past. So multidisciplinary and multidimensional. And what we're seeing is the organizations that make the best impact and have the most advances in that, or where you can bring together government, industry, and academia all together to work on a common hard problem. So what you see is a lot of universities going off and starting research parks. The problem is that most universities are landlocked. And so when they start a research park, they have to do it 5 miles down the road. And when you get 5 miles down the road, there's very little interaction between the research park and the university itself. I often say that we're a university sitting in the middle of a cow pasture, and my marketing person hates when I say that, but the fact of the matter is that that's a big strategic advantage for us, is we have an opportunity to build a research park that's adjacent to the university. And because we're in this environment now where it's difficult to get funding for facilities, we have to think creatively about how we're going to build this university. So our vision is that the 500 to 800 acres that are beside the university, just west of the university, we would like to gain control of that and build a research park with a town center in the research park, with shops in the research park, because what we know is that people in the high-tech industry, they don't want to drive far to work every day.
You mean you can actually get tired of people's barbecue? That's impossible. Yes. That's the only place close to you, I think.
Yeah, well, it's close as relative. It still means getting in a car and driving down the road.
Yes.
And it takes a long time.
That
and
dorm food's not doing it for you?
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, a lot of people don't know this, but Research Triangle Park is really struggling now. And the reason why Research Triangle Park is struggling is that it was created, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago when companies wanted to come in and build a big research campus. And people had to drive from 30, 40 miles away to the research campus, and there's just a lot of overhead with that. And so what the most successful research parks now are what they call live, work, play environments, where people live, they can walk to work or bicycle to work. Schools are also there, so their kids can go to school. They have all of their outdoor activities close by. You know, when they go to work, they can walk out of the office building and walk next door to a restaurant and eat in the restaurant. And that's what we're trying to create in that research park. What we really want to do is tear the fence down of the university and not be able to tell the difference between where the university starts and where it stops. So we integrate industry, academia, and government all together to work on those common hard problems. And we're already beginning to see some of that over with SunTrax. And, you know, of course, SunTrax is a very big thing for us and a potentially big thing for the state of Florida. Autonomous vehicles expected to be some estimate $100 billion industry. And one of the big elements of that is testing of those vehicles. And so SunTrax is a partnership between the Florida Turnpike Enterprise and Florida Poly that's actually going to go off and really work that area and work it hard. And so they're building that track, and there'll be a big research park around that as well.
What other universities, going back to the research park idea? I know that NC State has a research park. Obviously, people know about Research Triangle and how large and how expansive that is. UCF has a research park adjacent to the university. So what are the ones that you think are successful out there to use as a model?
Well, I think that the UCF one is nestled in very closely, and they have a great anchor tenant. And there. And so I think they've been very effective at integrating the university and the research park. Centennial Campus is the model that I know the most about, and because I was there for a little while. And that's one that often wins awards for one of the best research park. And that really is because it's adjacent to the university. I know more of the ones that haven't worked all that well. And
not
that I'm going to mention them, but generally what people believe is the reason why they haven't worked so well is because they're far enough away from the university that there's just not much interaction.
So when I think of Centennial Park at NC State, I think of the Linux Red Hat company there. And what are some of the other companies?
They got about 70 companies there. Red Hat, LexisNexis is now there. You know, a lot of the companies, there's a mixture of kind of large and small companies. And what we found is that most of the companies that come there actually come for access to the students. And that's the big motivating reason why they're there. So I think Cisco has a place there. ABB is very, very big. ABB, I think, was the first person to come on campus, and they still have a very large presence. There's a startup, bandwidth.com, which actually has a connection here to Lakeland. And that's a startup that's done really well.
Roommate of Steve Madden and Greg Madden, I think.
A wonderful company that is just doing marvelous things. Just went public and doing great. And so, you know, that's the type of environment that you get on a research campus like this, is you get a lot of the LED company.
Cree.
Cree came out of NC State, and that started on research campus.
And they're so, the largest LED manufacturer in the world,
largest manufacturer,
And they patented a lot of patents around the natural lighting.
That was a couple of guys out of graduate school at NC State. And so,
I mean, universities are really, you know, knowledge worker factories.
They are.
And coupling new businesses and startups, as you know, I have a passion for startups, and a university really can help make a local economy vibrant.
It does. And you know, there's a Kaufman report from, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago. And what they say is that large companies are job destroyers. You know, if you look at the really large companies, most of them lose jobs each year, but new companies and small companies are job creators. I think large companies lose about 1 million jobs a year, whereas new companies and small companies add about 3 billion. So if we're really serious about growing the high-tech economy here in Lakeland, you know, we got to create an environment that attracts those companies into a research park, and we got to help them grow. And that's why we one of our real focuses on small and medium businesses. You know, and that's not to say that we're neglecting large companies. We do a lot of work with large companies as well, but what we really want to do is try to pull in a lot of those small, medium businesses into a research park, help them grow, because that really is the mission of the university, is to catalyze a high-tech economy here in Polk County.
It's interesting. I have a story to share with you. One of your interns working for in Zeta, one of my startup companies, just graduated and is moving to Boston because his girlfriend is going to grad school, and he decided not to go to grad school. He wants to continue working in Zeta, get a little bit more experience.
Oh, good.
And then go back to grad school to see where he wants to focus.
Yeah,
so
that's
it's nice to have companies that, you know, that you can take those interns and put them in and let them apply their knowledge.
Right. Yeah, we of course, this was our first graduation year, and the inaugural class graduated. I think we had about 220 graduates, and you know, we're very excited for them. They were certainly risk takers coming to a university that wasn't accredited, and I think that there's a that lot that says about the culture of that class taking those risks, and I think you're seeing that with him. You know, in terms of statistics, we won't know for sure for another year, but from our surveys and the ones that answered survey, about 94% of the students either have a job, either have an offer in hand that they're considering, or are going to graduate school.
So if someone wants to hire a Florida Poly intern, and there's, you know, this is a college town, we have a lot of universities that have that. I know about the Handshake app. I think you guys have joined in on Handshake.
I think we're just beginning. We had something called Purple Briefcase, but I think we're transitioning over now to Handshake.
And is how do they find these interns? Who do they need to contact the university?
They contact the university. Dr. Catherine Miller is the person that helps with the internship and career for the students, and she's the best person, but they can always come through me as well.
Because you require, as part of the curriculum, you require internships, right?
Internship is a requirement, yes. There was a study done a number of years ago that basically said is your likelihood of getting a job when you graduate is not dominated by what school you went to, and it's not even related to what field you majored in. The highest predictor of whether you get a job is whether you did an internship or not. So all of our students have to do internships, and part of that is the culture of the university is that we walk a fine line. You know, universities are a lot of pressure these days, and a lot of that pressure is around getting jobs in high-paying industries and about prepared for the workforce. But the mission of the university really is broader than just preparing you for your first job, because as we know, most people that get out their first job, they only stay in 3.8 years, and they go to a second job. So we're doing a disservice if we only prepare you for that first job. And so we walk a fine line by having a curriculum that plays a lot of attention and importance to things like theory and fundamentals, because you got to have those really strong fundamentals. And if you have those, then it makes you lifetime employable, not just the first job, but the second job. But what I tell people is that most people that show up from work their first day, Art told them to go sit in their office, shut the door, and by themselves turn the textbook to page 138 and do odd number problems, which is what we do in schools, in the universities. And what they're told is, I got this problem, and you need to go fix it. And you say, well, what's the problem? Can you define it for me? And the company says, no, that's your job to figure out what the problem is. And oh, by the way, you have to work with all these other people, and they're all in different disciplines. And so part of what we also try to do is this hands-on component to the university, where we're giving them a fairly steady stream of real problems that they can go off and solve, where they can apply the things that they're learning in class to solving those problems. The other thing that we hear is 92% of executives say that soft skills are just as important, if not more important, than hard skills. You know, most universities, particularly engineering schools, concentrate on those hard skills, and those hard skills are very important. Particularly as a school that's 100% STEM, we also have to focus on the soft skills.
You said 100% STEM for our listeners.
100% STEM.
So for our listeners, science, technology, engineering, and math.
Science, technology, engineering, and math. And there's actually three types of STEM. There's behavioral sciences, psychology, sociology, and most people don't think of those as STEM, but they are actually STEM. There's life sciences, biology, botany, those types of things.
Zoology, I think. Isn't that your undergrad?
That's my undergrad. Those also STEM, and then there's what's called core STEM. Core STEM being engineering, mathematical sciences, physical sciences, physics, chemistry. And Florida Poly is on core STEM, and that's it. It really focuses on those three, engineering, mathematics, and physical sciences. So,
which differentiates you from the other 11 universities that all have that. You know, they have a
portion
of it.
They have STEM.
They have some STEM, but they also have liberal arts and things.
They do, yes. And so we the legislature says that we have to be at least 50% STEM, but I think that, you know, as we look for one of our differentiation points, it's that we're 100% STEM, and we'll stay pretty much close to that.
So this Poly 2.0 idea has me intrigued. Tell me a little bit, you know, as this university was created to be a high-tech, you know, and create a high-tech economy, also to be a STEM school, you know, what are some of the other things that you're doing there? You know, you mentioned SunTrax. Tell people what SunTrax is all about.
SunTrax is a relationship, partnership between the Florida Turnpike Enterprise and between Florida Poly. Florida Turnpike Enterprise is building a track adjacent to the university. It's about a 400-acre facility. It consists of two tracks. One is a outer track, which is an oval loop that's used to do testing and development of advanced tolling systems. And then the interior of the track is going to be a facility for testing autonomous vehicles. And as you know, that's a big market that's coming up these days. Like I said, about $100 billion market is what people estimate. But you see a lot of companies are rushing to this to try to get things implemented and get them in place because the market is so large. And some of those rushes to markets are having disastrous results with people getting killed. And part of that is because it just hasn't been thoroughly tested enough. And that's what the purpose of this track is a test facility so that we can look at those rare cases that end up happening at some point where someone gets killed, and then we can help guide and improve the technology so that doesn't happen so much.
You know, it's funny, people are quick to point out the, you know, the failures in some of the autonomous vehicles, Randy, but I've seen also that claims out there by some of the manufacturers like Tesla that indicate that there's more miles driven on autopilot that are safer than if you were driving without autopilot. So yes, they've had some three bad accidents that I'm aware of. Yeah. I think that's what it, but three bad accidents when you look at the millions of miles they've put on,
exactly,
isn't that bad, you know?
Yeah, so. No. And you know, because it's something new and people don't trust it, they're going to sensationalize it when it does happen.
It should be tested and scrutinized.
But it does have to be tested.
Yeah. What a great opportunity.
It is a great opportunity.
So let's talk about autonomous vehicles. How's it going to change life? Let's just kind of go in a different direction. We'll go back to university. But how do you see it?
I think it's going to have a tremendous change. And so, you know, certainly it's going to have a change in things like insurance. It's expected to have a change in emergency rooms at hospitals because a lot of those are from car wrecks. Certainly the auto industry is going to change tremendously, and it just depends on how visionary or futurist you want to be. And, you know, the standard narrative is that people aren't going to own cars anymore, that it's going to be a service, and you just call for the service and the car comes and picks you up. And I don't know if that's going to happen or not. It could very well, because, you know, as you have more autonomy, the cars could get more expensive. But I think that there's a lot of industries that this is going to change, a big impact on.
Well, I have a 9 and a 14-year-old, and my wife Shelly calls herself the mommy taxi. So I imagine there's a lot of parents on the phone that can imagine life with an autonomous vehicle and being able to send Junior over to the baseball game and then pick him up at a certain time. That can be life-changing.
So one of the other things is you asked the question about how are we going to be involved to help and build a high-tech economy. And so when the university was created, that was really a driving force, was to help grow a high-tech economy. And universities talk about that all the time and being involved, but we really take that to heart. That really is one of the big missions of the university. So one of the things that we are thinking of doing as we grow the university and we grow the number of new programs is to do what is called application pull instead of technology push. When you look at new developments that come about, they really come about two different ways. You know, one is an application pull. I have a problem that I want to solve. The other one is I have this interest in technology and I want to go off and do that technology. Well, universities by far and large really operate technology push. Right? It's about creating some new knowledge and then pushing that knowledge. And that new knowledge may or may not find a home in something. But businesses operate application pull. I have a market, and now I want to go off and build something that answers that market.
And the famous one that I think about is something that came out of the space program, you know, from an application push perspective, the oxygen sensor. And Bosch, you know, a German company, actually incorporated that in their exhaust gas analyzation to find out if the fuel was the right mixture. And that's led to non-polluting cars, much cleaner cars. And what a great application
solution of a problem.
Exactly.
So what we're doing is we're looking at the local EDCs, Economic Development Councils, and looking at, from a strategic viewpoint, what markets do you want to grow here in the Lakeland area? Then what we'll do is we'll put programs around the technologies that underpin those markets. And so that's one of the things we're talking about aligning the university a little bit better with some of the plans here and around Polk County.
So, Randy, when you think about the breadth of students that you have, from local students to Florida students to students from all over America, all over the world, in fact, one of the attractors to any college program, you think of is sports. And you guys don't have sports, and some of the things that other established universities that have been around for a long time have. How do you guys grapple with that?
We don't grapple with it. The fact of the matter is, as an institution that's 100% STEM, that I would say that most of the kids don't come for sports. They aren't interested in sports. What we find is the students that come to this university are naturally curious, and they're actually much more interested in doing hackathons. They're more interested in spending their time on projects and building things. And so, and if you visit the campus, you'll see there's a certain culture to the campus around problem solving around that. And I don't think, for the most part, our kids don't miss sports, and that's not the reason why they come to the university. So I don't think that that's been an issue for us. As a matter of fact, it's probably helped us self-select the types of students that we want, which are, of course, very serious students. But students that really want to spend their weekends doing hackathons and building things.
So, Randy, my last question for today is Polytechnic had so many things, not go in its favor early on. It's out. You guys have met all the state mandates. You're accredited, meaning you can get state funding for your scholarships and Bright Futures and things like that. So a lot of things going great. What is it that the community can do to help you be more successful? I know you don't have alumni, for example, so you can't necessarily, you have one graduating class right now and those guys are just getting their first jobs. How do you go out and raise money? How can the community help Poly be more successful?
Fundraising is always very difficult when you don't have alumni. And, as I said earlier, we had to get to 1,300 students, and you had to do that in an environment where you weren't accredited. And so what that meant is that if you're not accredited, you can't get federal financial aid students. And so we had to pay the full ride for students for the first 3 years. Now, that doesn't mean that in Poly 2.0 that stops. And it doesn't stop because, as I said, our focus now is on shaping that class and getting the best students within the state of Florida and even outside the state of Florida into the nation and international students as well. And so now we're transitioned from getting students that couldn't get federal financial aid to actually having to offer very competitive scholarships to get the quality of students that we want. And so we'll still continue to have challenges with fundraising. And so that's always going to be a big thing for the university as we go forward.
I really do have one last question here, sure. Randy. North Carolina barbecue or Florida barbecue?
North Carolina barbecue.
Randy, a lot of people just signed off the air right there with that. So I happen to like North Carolina barbecue as well. But thank you so much for being here today. And I will see you soon.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it.
Listen Lakeland is brought to you as a collaborative project between Lakeland Vision, the City of Lakeland, and Hall Communications. Truly a community working together to provide an exceptional quality of life.